Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Keith Harmon Snow. Keith is an independent journalist. He's a war correspondent, a human rights investigator, a photographer, a lecturer, a man of all seasons. That's who Keith Harmon Snow is. And he certainly knows North Africa very, very well. And there is never a time when there aren't major events going on, especially anything America has anything to do with or gets their dirty paws into, as they so often do, and they certainly keep me busy talking about it and writing about it, and especially on this program, and lots of other places that want to discuss these things. Keith has been on the two things that I've been focusing on like a laser, what's going on especially in the Middle East, North Africa, especially Libya, and also the devastating, well, it began as an earthquake and a tsunami, but the real story in Japan is the nuclear catastrophe. Oh, my goodness. I mean, if there were honest headlines, and I guess we don't really know everything, but if there were honest headlines, in my belief, as bad as the Libyan fiasco is, and the fact that it may bog down into, dare we suggest, another protracted war? How many protracted wars can America fight? Well, they've only got 10 fingers on their hands. Maybe when they run out of fingers, they'll stop adding new wars. Anyway, Libya is the latest one. Maybe we could begin with that, but we want to talk about Japan as well. And I'm no nuclear expert, but I honestly believe that we are talking about something unprecedented is not the right word. Something so serious that I run out of adjectives describing the potential harm that may come from that, but you certainly don't get it in the news. You don't get anything about it practically in the news, a snippet here or there. But let me get into my guest. Keith, I welcome you to the program.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for having me on.
A long-winded introduction. Let's start with Libya. You've written about it, so have I. And then before, maybe take the first half of the program on Libya, then jump over to Japan and talk about that. Your thoughts on what's happening in Libya?
Well, it couldn't be worse. I mean, except Japan. Irresponsible American adventurism, military attacks against another country, three wars going on that most people know about overtly, as well as these more covert wars going on in Congo, Sudan. Libya's situation, of course, is launched out of Djibouti, and not many people seem to know this, but the U.S. has a military base, a covert operations base in the little country of Djibouti, which is over on the Horn, near the Straits of Hormuz, I believe. And the operations out of there involve, for example, unmanned aerospace vehicles, UAVs, or Predator drones. And they operate out of Djibouti, as well as these covert operations forces. And that's the base for U.S. military operations in Sudan, at present in Sudan, Ethiopia, Somalia, Kenya, and sometimes Uganda. And this is, of course, the only so-called base for the Pentagon's Africa Command. Of course, there is another base, and that is down in the Congo, and there are several bases in Rwanda, and there's a base in Uganda, but people don't know anything about those. The system doesn't report those, but they've been built, they exist, they're there, and this is AFRICOM, and AFRICOM, of course, is running the show in Libya.
and AFRICOM, as you know very well, Keith, and so do I. AFRICOM, the African Command and the Mediterranean Command, it is not even based in that area. My goodness. I mean, the African countries apparently want no part of an AFRICOM, which is, you know, a war-making apparatus, one of, what, 9 or 10 U.S. commands. Well, they're based in Germany, of all places. How do you get an African command based in Germany? Well, that's where it is, Keith, as you know.
Well, it's, of course, it shouldn't be there at all. You know, it's true that most countries in the continent have rejected the Pentagon's offers to set up bases there. But unfortunately, we have all these little hopscotch bases. They actually call them something else, not hopscotch. I can't think of the name, but these little bases that exist from the far eastern side of the continent, meaning a little island called Diego Garcia, which is in the it's between India and Somalia. And then you've got on the other side the two little islands, Sao Tome and Principe. And the U.S. military has bases there as well. And all across the continent, there are these relationships that have been set up that allow the U.S. military to land or to refuel or to operate troops out of these countries. In particular, one big one is right south of Libya in Niger, where the United States has deep covert operations forces stationed at present. And, of course, they've got covert operations involved in Libya at this very moment.
Let me ask you one question. My understanding is that CIA forces have virtually infested every country of any importance to America for years, and certainly the North African countries. I have to believe, you know, there are headlines today that a CIA has been in there for a few weeks. My goodness, it strikes me that they've practically always been in there. Is that a far-fetched conclusion?
I mean, in Libya...
In Libya.
Yeah, well, CIA's been all over Libya. They've had, you know, I don't know the details too well. What I mean by that is this is held up as a conspiracy theory, but the truth is that there's a guy named Wilson who was a former CIA operative who was in prison in the United States, and he was tried by an U.S. court with the Pentagon all over it and the CIA all over it, and he was charged with selling secrets to Gaddafi. But what he had done in the late 1970s was set up a CIA operation, even though he was a former CIA agent already. And this involved CIA operatives that sent in weapons into Libya to work with Gaddafi. They brought in U.S. covert forces to train Gaddafi's troops. And then these guys from Libya went out and committed what we're known, you know, what we've been told were terrorist acts. In different parts of the world. Anyway, this was a CIA operation, and the guy who set it all up was in prison in the United States, this guy named Wilson. So that's, you know, tells you something more about the CIA relationship to Gaddafi that people just don't understand or don't get anything about. The idea that the CIA had nothing to do with Libya from 2004 to the present, prior to February, for example, would be ridiculous. The CIA definitely had connections there. But even more interesting is the CIA relationship to the rebels, which some of these so-called rebels, the Front for the National Salvation of Libya, and these guys were trained by the CIA, working with the CIA back in the 1980s in Sudan under the CIA operative who was in power at the time in Sudan, and that would be President Nimeiri, and he was definitely a CIA operative. And they were working in Sudan, organizing these different attacks on different countries, including Libya, of course, was one of their targets back in the 1980s. So, you know, there's a deep connection to the CIA, and there's a connection today to the CIA rebels in Libya.
These dirty shenanigans go back a long way, Keith, and of course we're focusing now on Libya, but we throw a dot on the map and hit any country, and you could probably, I mean, if you knew what was going on, I mean, this stuff is supposed to be secret, but if you knew what was going on, you'd probably come up with stories just about as dirty, although some countries certainly are less important to Imperial America than others. others. Anyone with a lot of resources certainly gets the attention of Washington, to say the least. And the idea of the resources, Keith, as you know, it isn't getting access to them. Any Democrat or despot or whoever who runs a country with a lot of oil, gas, or anything else, well, they don't want to leave the stuff sitting in the ground. They want to get it out. They want to sell it and make money. So America wants to buy their oil? Terrific. We'll sell it to you. But the idea is to control it, and that's a big difference, and then decide, well, we'll decide which one of our oil companies gets how big a piece to get it out of the ground. And, of course, they're operating in all these other countries as well, so maybe some don't get as much in Libya as in someplace else anyway. And then who does not get the oil? If we have enemies or rivals and we want them not to get any or to get less, well, if you control the oil, then you make those decisions. I have to believe that we want to, at least in part, ace China out of as much access to Libyan oil as they would like. Is that a far-fetched idea?
Sure. We're trying to keep China out of the oil in Libya, and we're trying to keep North Korea from having any connections there. Of course, North Korea does maintain connections in other countries that we don't like, so North Korea is an interest that we're concerned about too. But definitely China is the big one. And it's also, you know, jockeying for control of the oil between corporations as well as against ideological foes. Meaning China is the big ideological foe that we don't want to control the oil there, but they definitely play a part in this. And then once we've got it, you know, harnessed to a certain degree, then the corporations fight amongst themselves. And so that's, you know, that's also what you see in the Congo. So it would be the French. Italy has had connections with a national oil company in Libya since 1959. They maintained these relationships over the course of Gaddafi's reign. And the British and the French set up their relationships with a national oil company in the 1980s and 90s. And the United States was shut out. So at some level, Exxon and Occidental Petroleum out of Texas were very unhappy with this because we had maintained these economic sanctions against Gaddafi, even while we had those CIA relationships that I mentioned. And they wanted these corporations, American Exxon and Occidental, for example, they wanted a bigger piece of the pie that they were being shut out. And then also there were the defense corporations. So it's important to note, too, that in order to control the oil, in order to make these destabilizations occur, and by destabilization we can look at the overt war like Afghanistan, Libya, and Iraq, or the more covert wars that are going on in Ethiopia, Somalia, Uganda, Congo, Sudan, Sierra Leone. And note that in the 1990s, in the late 1990s, it was reported by the Special Operations Command, SOCOM, which is another wing of the Pentagon, you know, SOCOM, that there were over 4,500 covert operations in 1 year. And that's all over the planet, 4,500 covert operations. And there aren't even that many countries, of course, and that's a lot of covert operations per year. And that was in the 1990s, and it certainly has not been scaled back. It's actually been significantly expanded.
No wonder the CIA has a budget that I remember in an article I wrote 3-4 years ago that there was some ex-CIA official no longer in the agency who was involved in the budget in one way or another. I think it was a woman, and she talked about the black budget at that time being $50 billion. I think that was early in the Bush administration. And then I remember saying something in an article I wrote that the Bush administration greatly increased CIA activities and funding and staffing. I mean, the CIA could have a $100 billion budget, Keith. I mean, if they were operating these drones over Pakistan, and God knows where else, and dropping these missiles or bombs, and I wonder whether what they're using, whether each one of those costs $1 million. I mean, they're dropping those things like pancakes on a skillet. They just may have a $100 billion budget. When they talk about the $700 billion U.S., I don't call it a defense budget. It's got nothing to do with defense. Let's call it what it is. It's a war budget. And we don't have a defense department, Keith, as you know. We have a war department. That's what they called it during World War II, because a war was going on. Well, the war has gone on ever since World War II. So let's call it what it should be called. It's a war department. We don't have any enemies. We make enemies because we wage war against them. And we spend all this money, but my goodness, over 4,500 covert operations. We could have a hell of a program talking about that, Keith, if we had somebody on the inside who knew about them.
You know, the other, you know, you talk about a black budget. We don't know what the budget is for the CIA. I mean, the CIA is a monster, as you point out, Stephen, very accurately. And, you know, born out of the OSS, if we go back to World War II, the operation of OSS was Operation of Special Services, or Overseas Special Services. But that's what, in World War II, became the CIA under Alan Dulles. And then the first thing they did was, eventually, was to set about assassinating John F. Kennedy. But anyway, the CIA has gone into all these countries and committed these massive atrocities, so that everything that President Obama said 3 nights ago in his special speech about Libya, everything that he said that Gaddafi was guilty of, we are also guilty of. So actually, we're far more guilty of that than Gaddafi. But what's important to note, given as big the size and the secrecy of the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency is at least 3 times the CIA's size. And then there's the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Office of Naval Research. These are other clandestine intelligence apparatus institutions that are operating out there with no or very little oversight or no oversight and these gigantic budgets. So imagine the budget of the National Security Agency and the fact that it's 2 or 3 times the size of the CIA. That's profound. And the Tomahawk missiles, by the way, that they're dropping on Libya or that they were launching on Libya – and it was originally 110, I think, and it's gone over to more than 150 or 200 of them at this point. Those cost between $1 and $1.5 million apiece. So let's talk about education in America, and let's talk about health care in America, and let's stop if we're Americans, stop this nonsense about how we're a great country and we're helping our people and we're helping the world, and this is democracy and truth and freedom and all of that other absolute rubbish.
Rubbish indeed, Keith. I talk about this all the time, and I love to say, and you get a lot of interviews, I do too, and I love to talk about all of the trillions of dollars that we're spending, even handing it to bankers on Wall Street, a bunch of thugs, a bunch of gangsters, a bunch of crooks. And we give them trillions of dollars. We know about at least 12.3 trillion, I believe. We know at least about that amount. I mean, it could be double that amount. Who knows? I mean, nobody says anything until stuff leaks out or whatever. And then we spend all this money fighting wars, and the official budget, 700 odd billion, I would say conservatively, including all the black budgets and intelligent budgets and all of the peripheral things that relate to the military budget, at a bare minimum, we probably spend at least $1.5 trillion a year on war, when we don't have an enemy in the world. The last enemy we had surrendered on the 15th of August, 1945. I remember it well, Keith, because I was hoping they just might delay it a little longer so it would come out on my birthday, which was 2 days later, and then I would always remember a VJ day. But they didn't listen to me back then when I was, how old was I back then? I was pretty young. I didn't have much of a voice then. I didn't have a radio program to ask them over. So they went 2 days before my birthday. But we have not had an enemy in the world since, and every single war America has waged since then, as you well know, has been an illegal war of aggression. We were the instigator. We committed the aggression. That's what we're doing in Libya. And the so-called handover to NATO, Keith, as you know, what a bunch of rubbish that is. I call NATO a metaphor for the Pentagon. And this General Bouchard, the Canadian, supposedly the new head of NATO, what nonsense. He works for Carter Ham, the AFRICOM boss. What a lovely system we have, Keith.
It's pretty ugly, Stephen, you know, and Americans just need to wake up. I mean, we're making enemies left and right. We're making enemies left and right, you know, and we're destroying the planet. People need to pull their heads out of their rear ends and realize what's going on. I hesitate to talk about Libya when I'm aware of what the status is in Japan at this very moment, and I know we're getting there. But it's really important to recognize the level of the deceptions that were being delivered, the extent to which Americans are buying this nonsense and allowing it to happen and supporting the killers, meaning members of our family who go off and become soldiers and then are celebrated left and right, and they show up in their uniforms on Wheel of Fortune and all these game shows in America, which are very politicized for those people that sit back and watch such game shows. They're very political, and they're just selling this absolute madness of warfare and destruction, which is being brought down on the entire world, including the United States of America. And it's going to get really bad because what's happened in Japan has, I think, tipped the apple cart in terms of the financial and economic crisis that began several years ago. And we're going to see things getting, very, very difficult and much more ugly than they are. And people need to really wake up about this.
I absolutely agree with you, and I say it all the time, over and over again. I've said it on air. I've said it so many times in articles that I've written, that the path that America is on now, literally, it is no understatement to say, it is the path to tyranny and ruin. And you're right. Unless people wake up and realize that the people running this country, they're criminals. And they're working against the interests of ordinary people in the country. They're stealing their wealth. They're stealing their freedoms. They're doing everything on false pretenses. And it doesn't get better. It doesn't matter whether it's Bush or Obama or the man on the moon. It could be a Yogi Bear. It could be anybody. It could be an electronic image. The power structure runs the country, and they're literally driving us to tyranny and ruin. And if people don't realize this, we're going to wake up one morning and realize the America that we thought we had, it doesn't exist anymore. The mask is off. There's all the ugliness, and you better keep your mouth shut or they're going to come get you in the middle of the night and either arrest you, throw you in a cell, or maybe shoot you dead on the spot. Who knows? Oh, God. We have about 9 minutes left, Keith. I'd love to spend the rest of the day on Libya. Talk about Japan. I see this as something beyond the word unprecedented to describe. I mean, this is a disaster. It's being covered up, and in my opinion, it has the potential to kill many, many millions of people, and not just in Japan.
Well, it's going to, I mean, the first few days it became clear to those of us who watched the nuclear power industry, Stephen, that what we saw in Japan was an apocalypse. Now, I don't use that word lightly, and I published a story, Nuclear Apocalypse in Japan, and immediately I was attacked by some of my friends for being sensationalist, and I was attacked by some people in Japan, criticized very harshly, privately, some people that I work with as a journalist, some organizations that I write with, for example, who live there, who said, you know, your sensationalism is over the top, Keith. Thanks so much. And I sent back an email and said, you better read what I wrote, and you better get out of Japan. Because today, the 30th of March, the news has finally broken that reactor number 2 has gone into complete meltdown. This is not a possible meltdown anymore. This is a complete meltdown through the reactor pressure vessel and dropped down into the cement in a pile of molten neutronic slab that is irradiating the planet. 40 kilometers or 35 to 40 miles, Greenpeace has reported high radiation levels. They were calling for Japan to expand its radiation evacuation zone 4 days ago, and Japan was denying that it should do that. And today, finally, they're admitting that the radiation levels in the water off of the coast are 3,500 times what we would call normal, which is already high in that area because the nuclear plant was operating and releasing radioactivity on a daily basis. 3,500 times normal. Plutonium is in the soil. Of course, when they found the plutonium 3 days ago, the National Public Radio, whose reporting on nuclear stuff is horrendously deceptive, criminal, because they take money from the nuclear corporations. So NPR reported that they'd found plutonium, and in the very same sentence, no risk to the public. Plutonium is deadly for 24, the half-life is 24,000 years. Japan, this part of Japan, whether it's a 35 or a 50-mile radius from the Fukushima plants, is now uninhabitable forever. And that radiation is making its way into the atmosphere. Over the United States at this very moment, the radiation levels in Massachusetts and California that have been reported by the media that covers this stuff up, and in the same breath, like the plutonium thing, they said, but these radiation levels, higher radiation levels, are no threat to the public. Every single radiation rise is a threat to the public. Radiation, all radiation is unsafe because it's cumulative. But what they say is that it's no different than spending a day in the sunshine. I mean, these lies are criminal. They're absolutely criminal. People need to realize the extent of the problem in Japan. And Fukushima number two was one of the ones that remained partially intact. Fukushima number three blew the roof off. And so the question comes up, what happened to the spent fuel pool at Fukushima number three? And the spent fuel pool at number four caught on fire. Spent fuel pool at number one, two, three, four, five, six, and the seventh spent fuel pool, that's a common spent fuel pool. All of these spent fuel pools are incredibly deadly, and they have cesium-137 and cesium-134, and that cesium fire, that fire in spent fuel pool floor about March 17th, somewhere around there, that was, if you burned a bonfire in your house and you put all this stuff on it, you can stand there and see the heat rising. You can see the vapors in a small bonfire, and you can see the ash and the soot going up into the air. Imagine this gigantic fire of invisible nuclear material entering the atmosphere all the way up, and then floating around up there, all this radiotoxicity. And that's just from the spent fuel pool number four. Never mind the two hydrogen explosions that blew the roofs off these other two. And then we've got the problem of these meltdowns. And they're saying that they're going to have to spray water, cold, fresh water, not seawater. And that's significant because the plants are located right next to the Pacific Ocean, but they can't use the Pacific Ocean because the heat was evaporating the water and leaving the salt, and that was creating another dangerous scenario because they originally used the salt water as a last-ditch effort to stop the meltdown. And they did that because you got the ocean right there, but they can't even use it because the pumps were broken, because there was a blackout. It was not the tsunami, and it was not the earthquake. It was a blackout. The emergency generators failed to operate. The safety systems that were told are backup, redundancy, defense in depth, failed to operate. And we have had scenarios similar to this in the United States. It does not take a tsunami. It does not take an earthquake to make this happen. It takes a loss of off-site power or a blackout. And we're seeing blackouts in America. We've seen them over the last 10, 2, 3 years. We see them in California. We see them because of electrical shutdowns. We see them because of lightning strikes. We see them because of snowstorms. And we see them because of tornadoes. The idea that this can't happen in America is the second biggest lie. The first one is that the radiation is not a big deal. And the second one is that this cannot happen in America. And President Obama came out and said that we're going to continue with our nuclear program. And even today, the nuclear industry and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and all these people that have taken all this money, billions and billions and billions of dollars over the last 35 years from the nuclear industry, are all saying in lockstep that what happened in Japan is Japan, and we're going to push forward with our next generation nuclear power in the United States. That's criminal.
That's criminal indeed, Keith. There's an old song from the 1950s that I remember by Tom Lehrer. It was about a nuclear bomb killing us, and the song was, "We'll all go together when we go." Well, you know, these people, they may be destroying the planet, irradiating it, maybe some years or centuries or whatever from now. We'll all be exterminated. But what a party they're having, making all this money in the meantime. So who gives a damn who goes all together when when they go, and we're not around to worry about it anymore. That's their problem. That isn't our problem. That's the way these people think, and they put their puppet in the Oval Office to do their bidding. Obama, the peace candidate, the people's candidate, the candidate promising change, the candidate who on day one of the White House screwed over the people who voted for him and said, the hell with you. I represent money and power, and I don't give a damn what you want. I'm going to, well, he didn't say, I mean, this is what he said without telling us. I'm going to wage these damn wars. I'm going to irradiate the planet. I'm going to do everything to help my Wall Street friends, and you can all starve to death. That's the kind of man that we elected in the White House, but it doesn't make any difference. Whoever follows him will be even worse, because each administration gets worse than the next one. Clinton was worse than Ronald Reagan, and George Bush was worse than Clinton, and Obama is worse than George Bush, and Brand X, who follows Obama, will be worse than him, and the only solution is people power. Right, Keith?
Yeah, people need to wake up and realize that we can organize and stop this, but, you know, people think that revolution is something that communists do. In fact, I'm a revolutionary, I'm a communist. We need communism. Communism is what we're talking about, socialism, communism, communes, community.
Oh, community is right. Oh, we're out of time. I wish we could keep this going. My God, I'm just getting wound up, Keith. Every program ends when I'm just getting wound up. Do you have the same feeling at the end of an interview?
It's good for me to take a break now and then.
Keith, this was great. I hope I'll get you back and we'll do more. Neither one of these disasters is going away in a hurry, that's for sure, especially Japan's. I mean, Libya, you know, someday that war will end, but the Japanese catastrophe is here forever, forever. That's for
sure. Of course, they're irradiating Libya with uranium weaponry,
as
they're doing in Afghanistan and Iraq, and this is war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide.
Absolutely. Depleted uranium. God help the Libyan people. Keith, my great thanks for coming on.
Okay, take care.
And join us this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll have more on this stuff because it's important, and you'll never get it on CNN or NPR or those places, because those people won't tell you what you need to know, but this program will. And so will Progressive Radio.